Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next 2 half-hour segments, we're going to examine something that, in fact, has very profound political and national security implications, but something that has been sadly inadequately treated by not only scientists, but also political scientists, and last but most assuredly not least, the media, the so-called alternative media, as well as the mainstream media. And as always, note the use of the term so-called. This question is the UFO phenomenon. Now, generally, the UFO phenomenon has been journalistically and politically dichotomized into one of two extremes. Either it's all nonsense, it's pilots mistaking the planet Jupiter on a bright night for a UFO, or publicity seekers, or whatever, or cheap hoaxes, or else it's space aliens from hell. And there's no middle ground. What never occurs to people is that perhaps some of the alien contact mythology, and mythology it is, has been deliberately created by the National Security Establishment for purpose or purposes as yet to be determined, and that perhaps UFOs, that is to say unconventional flying machines of unconventional shape, circular, triangular, or whatever, might very well be real, but that they do not come from outer space. A vitally important and refreshing perspective on the UFO phenomenon has been provided by Dr. Jacques Vallée, and in the on the back flap of a book entitled Revelations, subtitled Alien Contact and Human Deception by Jacques Vallée, last name V-A-L-L-E, accent aigu-E. Jacques Vallée's credentials are described as follows. Dr. Jacques Vallée, a former principal investigator on Department of Defense computer networking projects, was born in France, where he was trained in astrophysics. He moved to the United States in 1962 and received his Ph.D. in computer science in 1967 from Northwestern University, where he was a close associate of the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek. The author of numerous articles and 3 books about high technology, Dr. Vallée first became interested in the subject of UFOs when he witnessed the destruction of tracking tapes of unknown objects at a major observatory. His research into the phenomenon has taken him to many places in the United States and to many countries around the world, including France, Scotland, Australia, Brazil, and Russia. This last journey resulted in his landmark study, UFO Chronicles of the Soviet Union. Dr. Vallée's unique approach to this phenomenon was crystallized when he served as the real-life model for the character of the French scientist played by François Truffaut in Steven Spielberg's film Close Encounters of the Third Kind. In 1991, Jacques Vallée published this remarkable book entitled Revelations, subtitled Alien Contact and Human Deception. It was published in softcover by Ballantine Books, again, copyright 1991, and the ISBN number is 0-345-37566-1. And by the way, in connection with the UFO question, I would also refer interested listeners to another Vallée book entitled The Messengers of Deception, dealing with so-called UFO contactee cults, and indicating not only that many of them were obviously monitored and to a certain extent controlled by the intelligence community and military, but that many of them had overtly fascistic political overtones as well. That's something we're going to touch on in the second part of our discussion. In the introduction to Vallée's book, he presents over several pages what really is sort of a summary of the information that he presents throughout the book. And I'm going to read that in the interests of time, because we certainly have not got time to go over the entire book. For over 40 years, the phenomenon of unidentified flying objects has mystified hundreds of thousands of sincere witnesses, yet the scientific establishment has refused to study it and stubbornly continues to deny the very existence of the mystery. The governments of the major nations have assembled countless dossiers about the subject. In the course of military and intelligence data gathering, many remarkable facts have been accumulated, as we know from the few tidbits the U.S. government has been forced to release under the Freedom of Information Act. Yet officials have never seen fit to declassify most of the files. So a market has been created for the hoaxers, the charlatans, those who are in the business of selling dreams and delusions. Never mind that the few dedicated investigators who have patiently analyzed the sightings recognize that we are still far from a solution to the mystery. Eager believers have fabricated fanciful explanations out of whole cloth to provide belief and dogma where knowledge was lacking. As I have shown in Dimensions and Confrontations, there is indeed a genuine UFO phenomenon, and it constitutes one of the many mysteries that nature offers us. In my view, it represents an opportunity to practice some good science and to become aware of levels of consciousness we had not previously recognized. But the current proliferation of spurious material that confuses the real issues bothers me. it should be analyzed and exposed for what it is. At best, a dangerous delusion, the germ of new cults that would extinguish the light of reason and free inquiry. At worst, an attempt to draw attention away from the real nature of the UFO phenomenon, a deliberate effort to drive serious research into the quicksands of speculation. Not only have individual visionaries come forward with the definitive revelation that UFOs came from Venus, Clarion, Huva, Zeta Reticuli, or hundreds of other places, but an entire cottage industry has grown around groups dedicated to the, quote, study, unquote, of fantasies channeled by our kind space brothers from such unlikely places as UMO, capital U, capital M, capital M, capital O, or the Pleiades. Organizations with mysterious sources of money are now springing up with dozens of local chapters all over the United States and Canada, and indeed, all over the world. They hypnotize witnesses, they hold seminars and conferences, they edit expensive books and videotapes, some even run their own presses. Their activity blurs the real nature of the phenomenon and complicates its study. It adds another factor of confusion to the bewilderment of sincere witnesses who wonder what they have seen and who are looking for a helping hand. Things would not be so bad if the only hoaxers came from the lunatic fringe. Every field of endeavor has such borderline fanatics, even well-established and dignified disciplines like physics, with its entourage of perpetual motion inventors, astronomy with its retinue of hollow earthers, and medicine with its proliferation of quacks. But there is more. Those who spend time in the field, analyzing traces left by the UFO phenomenon, interviewing witnesses, and assembling a study of the underlying patterns, have now stumbled on evidence of a quite different sort. Some of the most remarkable sightings are actually complex hoaxes that have been carefully engineered for our benefit. The witnesses are merely the victims and the instruments rather than the authors of the hoax. Who is perpetrating such deliberate fabrications and what is their goal? There is no single answer to this question because there is no single source to human fantasy, no single reason for the deviousness of those military or civilian agencies that are spending our money to conduct secret psychological experiments, as the mind control projects of the 60s and 70s have abundantly demonstrated. So as I kept digging into a mass of information that had been generally avoided, it is not surprising that my research should have taken me toward some unexpected quarters. Some cases, it turns out, involved private groups with fantastic delusions and an insane compulsion to spread them to a larger segment of the public. Others were found to have been engineered by government agencies engaged in psychological warfare exercises on which they declined comment, conveniently burying them behind the curtain of classified intelligence. This bears emphasizing. Some UFO sightings are covert experiments in the manipulation of the belief systems of the public, and some cases simply did not happen. The stories about them, numerous rumors of crashed saucers and burned aliens, were not so much the result of delusions as the product of deception. Rumors deliberately planted in the eager minds of gullible believers to hide more real facts about which it was felt that the public and the scientific community had no, quote, need to know, unquote. In previous works, I have argued that ufology was, among other things, quote, folklore in the making, unquote, and that it ought to be studied as such. I was referring to the accumulation of stories about contact with aliens, a new form of mythology that formed a striking parallel to the intercourse with angels, demons, and elves in earlier ages. But the stories that are spreading now go way beyond anything in ordinary folklore. We are told that aliens have crashed on Earth in their flying machines, that bodies have been recovered, and autopsies performed. The first part of this book, entitled Alien Retrievals, describes the array of such stories that have proliferated in the last 10 years. Accounts no longer come from drunken prospectors in the desert or from con men trying to make a fast buck. I have listened to a general who headed up an agency of the U.S. Air Force and who told me about his own contact. I have had dinner with an ex-CIA pilot who assured me the aliens were actually here, alive, and in large numbers, working secretly with our scientists. And another man, a former naval intelligence officer, assured me he had once been assigned the mission to brief 3 admirals on the nature of the secret treaty that linked the U.S. government to these aliens who lived inside our most secret military bases. He could locate the bases and claimed he could identify people who had seen these so-called aliens, but he never came through with their names. In Las Vegas, I met with Robert Lazar, who assured me that he had actually worked on a Navy intelligence project to reverse engineer the propulsion system of 9 flying saucers held in secret hangars. But Robert Lazar also told me of his strange memory lapses, of the peculiar liquid he was made to drink. And by the way, it has been the conjecture of Valet and possibly Lazar himself that Lazar had been under mind control. Continuing, Valet says more about his book, skipping down. In part 3, entitled The Cobweb Correlation, I have tried to show that the fast-growing belief in alien contact may well contain the germ of more dangerous developments. The fact that the genuine UFO cases have been ignored by professional scientists and that even the great mythologists of our time like Joseph Campbell have remained utterly blind to them makes the phenomenon, with all its wonderful physical and psychic complexity, a convenient medium that can be sculpted with complete impunity by the manufacturers of alternative theologies and the professional manipulators of the human mind. All that can be said today about the genuine UFO phenomenon is that it involves human consciousness as well as physical effects in its manifestations. The study of such enigmas is what science is all about. But the line of belief in the reality of that phenomenon and the fascination with those who claim to control it or to be in intimate contact with it is very fine indeed. This book demonstrates how this fine line has repeatedly been crossed and what the consequences of the resulting delusions could be. More importantly, the UFO mystery holds a mirror to our own fantasies. It expresses our secret longings for a wisdom that might come down from the stars in new, improved, easy-to-use packaging to reveal the secrets of life and tell us at long last who we are. In return, of course, for a modest fee, an easily affordable spiritual, social, and political investment. Why is it that in this process we are always told that we have to relinquish the right to interrogate the higher entities we worship? Why are we afraid to ask them who they are and to demand what makes them so interested in teaching us, in frightening us, or in enlisting our help in the great cosmic saga of their allegedly higher endeavors? In the process of such interrogation, we might well discover the ultimate horror, as in the poem by Borges, B-O-R-G-E-S, quoted at the beginning of this book, there may be no higher entities lurking in the maze after all, and no little grayish aliens with bug eyes in the morgues of the Pentagon. In the final analysis, the labyrinth of our expectations may be empty, and it may require a completely different approach to solve the problem of detecting and communicating with the other forms of consciousness that probably fill the universe, and with the UFO phenomenon itself. How could we shed the dreams and start on the real journey at last? How could we ever recognize them if we keep being snared by humanity's folly, if we keep falling into the trap of our own delusions, and if, in the pursuit of our own preconceived theories, we rush to believe in every false revelation that comes along? Well, indeed, Valet points out, first of all, that there are indications that round circular flying machines in the Earth's atmosphere are a reality. He also points out that there appears to be a deliberate attempt on the part of elements of our national security establishment and probably those of other countries to deliberately deceive us as to the origins of these machines. And in future broadcasts, I will deal with a little bit of the recorded history of circular and other unconventionally shaped flying machines in the Earth atmosphere coming, by the way, from Earth, not from space aliens from Uranus, okay? So more about Valet's hypothesis here. Now, during the course of this book, Valet not only effectively debunks many of the alien contact experiences, many of the most famous of them, he points out that many of these alien contact experiences appear to have been deliberately created as part of a disinformation effort by elements of the national security establishment. So in other words, some elements of the military and intelligence community appear to be deliberately creating the myth of alien contact for purpose or purposes to be hypothesized about later on in this discussion. So again, in the interest of time, I haven't got space here. We haven't got time to go over not only the effective debunking, not of UFOs, but of the alien contact phenomenon. And beyond that, as Valet is going to encapsulate in the coming excerpt, Valet points out very effectively that many of these so-called ET contacts, these close encounters of the third kind, come from the national security establishment and appear to be part of a deliberate disinformation effort. In a segment entitled Cover-Ups and Blind Alleys, Valet writes, The UFO shelf at your local bookstore today bends under the weight of books that claim to expose the cover-up of the phenomenon by the government. And well, it should. There is no question that the Air Force has tried to push the whole business under the rug from the beginning. It has lied, ridiculed witnesses, and even denied before Congress that some of the most convincing cases had been reported by its own officers. This is not just covering up, it is blatant perjury. One government research group and possibly several have been in operation since the 50s. In that context, anyone claiming to uncover the truth and to expose the cover-up finds a ready audience among UFO believers and the public at large. But a very curious thing happens. Those who claim to bring us these amazing revelations are generally linked to the military or to the intelligence community themselves. What they are exposing is not the real secret group, but an outer layer of outright lies and deceptions that were meant to be exposed in the first place. Not only was John Lear a pilot for a CIA-controlled airline and Bill Cooper a naval intelligence man, but Bill English served as an information analyst at a listening post north of London. Bill Moore has admitted that he was an informant for the Air Force and possibly for other agencies as well, and his main contact, Richard Doty, D-O-T-Y, was trained in disinformation and in psychological warfare. By the way, Vallée also points out that many of the people who have been involved, perhaps apparently on behalf of the National Security Establishment, in disseminating some of the ET disinformation, may be doing so in good faith. So this is not necessarily to indict the character of any of these individuals, and that's a point I want to stress. Continuing. By what magic trick did these men manage to convince so many sane UFO researchers, including some professional scientists, that there was a hangar full of flying saucers at Area 51 and a cave full of flesh-eating aliens under New Mexico? One would expect ufologists to be particularly suspicious of any unverifiable claim coming from such sources. The answer is sadly simple. Most ufologists are incredibly naive when it comes to the methods of intelligence. Even the scientists among them have never taken the trouble to learn the basic rules by which classified information is controlled, used, and released. And when a real exposé comes to light, they refuse to look at it unless it happens to match their preconceptions. In 1979, I published such a series of exposés in Messengers of Deception. I pointed out that UFO author Major Keogh, who had written such informative books as The Flying Saucer Conspiracy and positioned the NICAP organization to expose the silent group and to force the release of UFO information, was actually under the control of a board of directors replete with psychological warfare experts linked to the intelligence community. I asserted that other groups were under similar surveillance. American UFO research was not willing to listen to such simple truth. The book was hastily rejected by the believers. It took another 10 years for the assertions it contained to be vindicated. As the full text of the 1953 Air Force panel, which gathered Luis Alvarez and other scientific luminaries, was finally understood, it became apparent that the real sponsor had been the CIA and that one of the secret recommendations targeted the infiltration of the UFO groups. By the way, I would note that Nobel Prize-winning physicist Luis Alvarez was also used to endorse the single bullet theory in the Kennedy assassination, one of the greatest pieces of readily verifiable fiction in contemporary political science. So again, note that not only many of the so-called alien contacts, but that many of the UFO cults themselves appear to be either controlled by and or infiltrated or generated by, respectively, the National Security Establishment itself. More about this phenomenon is discussed by Vallée. Skipping ahead, clever intelligence operations are structured with concentric layers like an onion. The data we have already reviewed show that the top level of the onion is designed around the official assertion that there is no UFO phenomenon at all. This is the level most skeptics and most scientists have chosen to believe. In my opinion, the evidence is very strong that a genuine UFO phenomenon exists, but serious, dedicated, and aggressive research is required to peel away this first layer and to find the real facts. The second layer is exemplified by MJ-12. It claims that there is a large conspiracy to hide the information, but that the government, the wise white father in the White House, knows the truth. In his kindness, he does not tell us, presumably because he wants to protect his children. I have shown that this notion was hard to believe. The UFO phenomenon is a major challenge to the entire edifice of our physics, and there is nothing that the president can do about it. There may be a lot of buried data in Washington. There may be a large research project secretly trying to decipher it, but there is no secret truth. Again, data is not information. Similarly, we have all the data in the world about cancer, but we still do not know precisely what mechanism causes it or how to prevent it in spite of the billions of dollars spent on research over the last half century. The third layer of the onion comes to us courtesy of Messrs. Lear and Cooper. It claims that the aliens are here and they rule the world. Perhaps the third layer is ludicrous, but it works. The entire thrust of American UFO research has been destabilized by this drivel, which would certainly not make it as science fiction. The inescapable conclusion is that the people who claim so vocally to expose the cover-up may be the ones who constitute the cover-up itself. Somebody is going to a lot of trouble to convince us of the reality of extraterrestrials to the exclusion of other, possibly more important hypotheses about UFOs. Then Vallée goes on to discuss UFO hoax, this one being the Gulf Breeze fiasco. After discussing the dichotomization of the UFO research field into either it's the planet Venus on a bright night or else space aliens from hell, Vallée goes on to discuss as follows about the Gulf Breeze 6 episode. This unfortunate trend toward sloppy research has left tragic casualties in the wake of a sensational UFO case in the Florida town of Gulf Breeze, where a local secret witness calling himself Mr. Ed produced a whole series of Polaroid shots of an extraordinary object. The pictures, according to Dr. Bruce Maccabee of the Washington-based Fund for UFO Research, were absolutely genuine. A Navy physicist, Dr. Maccabee said on several occasions that, quote, Ed could not have faked the pictures, unquote. The whole tale was hyped up by various amateur groups, notably the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, and it was published in a lavishly illustrated volume for which Mr. Ed reportedly obtained a six-figure advance. A television miniseries was planned. In the ensuing months, unfortunately, the Gulf Breeze House of Cards collapsed, taking with it much of the credibility still attached to the major UFO organizations in the United States. Mr. Ed, who turned out to be a local house builder named Ed Walters, had once asked a young man in his community to help him fake such UFO pictures. The young man had the courage to come forward and to confess publicly. A model of a flying saucer was found in the attic of Mr. Ed's former house. The physicist, who had pronounced the photographs authentic, acknowledged having received 10% of the publisher's advance for writing the last chapter of the book. Abduction writer Bud Hopkins studied Mr. Ed and determined that, you guessed it, the Florida contractor had been abducted by little aliens who needed to learn about human emotions. Media reaction ranged from skepticism to outright laughter. Some veteran ufologists resigned from MUFON and went back into the ranks of what Dr. Hynek had once called the Invisible College. Skeptics like Philip Klass, who had a field day with these absurd claims, were elated when it was revealed that the, quote, pillar of the community, unquote, Mr. Ed, had several brushes with the law in years past. But the most curious chapter in the sleazy chronicles of Gulf Breeze was still to be written. It exploded suddenly in a very unexpected form. This time, the U.S. intelligence community was right at the center of the controversy. And after discussing the particulars of the Gulf Breeze 6, in which a number of Army communication specialists went AWOL, Vallée goes on to summarize the case and to hypothesize about it as follows. The curious ufologist at this point has the right to ask a few disturbing questions. For instance, how on earth did these soldiers know nearly 1 month in advance that war was about to erupt in the Middle East? This, by the way, the Persian Gulf War. What motivated the incredible leniency of the Army when it simply discharged six intelligence communication specialists who had been missing for a whole week? And how did these soldiers manage to elude the FBI and the Army for so long? How did they get back into the United States without being picked up by immigration officers, who surely must have had their names prominently highlighted on their computer lists at every port of entry? The whole saga reeks of collusion and manipulation at a high level, and the manipulation must have been engineered by someone exquisitely familiar with the UFO scene, someone who exploited the soldiers' expectation of a massive UFO event in Gulf Breeze. I have found only tentative answers to some of the above questions. For instance, it turns out that there are ways for U.S. soldiers stationed in Europe to get into the United States without having to show a passport to anyone. That does not explain how they got off the hook so easily once they were caught. Here again, James Mosley may have hit on the truth when he made public the fact that the local Florida media had received a very strange teletype communication on July 25th, which read, U.S. Army, free the Gulf Breeze 6. We have the missing files, the box of 500-plus photos, and the plans you want back. Fillet goes on, the message, which went on with a threat to release unspecified UFO photographs, ended with, answer code AUGSBB3CM. The six soldiers were turned loose 3 days later. The existence of the strange message raises an interesting possibility. Could it be that the deserters did not simply hold top secret clearances, but were also cleared for crypto, giving them access to critical encoded security material? Was the alphanumeric code in the signature a hint of an actual cipher demonstrating the identity or the level of the access of the sender? This brings us back to the alleged psychic messages supposedly received by Vance Davis. Is it plausible that six smart soldiers, they may have been deluded, but they clearly demonstrated that they were not stupid, would have taken such a radical step as desertion purely on the basis of telepathic impressions? Is it not more likely that the messages about Armageddon and the salvation by UFOs came to them through the same secure channel they were using in their work, a channel which, by definition, would be above suspicion of tampering? Should we conclude that U.S. military communications channels may have been compromised by one or more cults with extreme beliefs and with the willingness to exploit the naivete of the ufologists to further their own goals? Such an action would certainly throw a new light on everything we have said earlier in this book about UMO and about other attempts to create and manage high-demand groups based on the belief in alien abduction. If the reader follows my line of reasoning to this point, then he is led to a final question. Who could have the bizarre motivation and the highly compartmented knowledge to access an encrypted network and to target these six soldiers to send them on such an absurd mission? Was it an exercise of the same genre as Pontoise and Bentwaters, a project that played games with the gullibility of the believers in order to test the feasibility of deception within a vital element of the armed forces? And is the American public the ultimate target of that deception? After their release, three of the soldiers went straight back to Gulf Breeze. In a relaxed, casual interview, they told a television reporter that they had never been interested in the rapture or the Antichrist. Everything was just a big misunderstanding. They had merely decided to come and visit a friend. Of course, if you are ready to believe that Mr. Ed was actually abducted by little gray aliens, then you might as well believe that six intelligence specialists will go AWOL just to see a friend across the ocean. Perhaps they were simply homesick. But the tough questions cannot be swept under the rug. Why isn't anyone telling the truth, and why doesn't the Army reveal what was written on the precious computer disk the soldiers were carrying with them when they were arrested in Gulf Breeze? That's all we have time for in this segment. We're going to continue with this discussion in our next half-hour segment. All of the half-hour segments, interviews, archive shows, and lecture tapes that I've done are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. Spitfire can be contacted at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. Email address, alcalame@ix.netcom.com. That's alcalame@ix.netcom.com. By the way, with regard to other means of publication I'm starting, people should not pre-subscribe. The funds for that publication are extremely limited. The first issue is being printed right now. People should only subscribe one issue at a time and should not pre-subscribe in case there are not too many more issues. Anyone who has pre-subscribed, needless to say, will be compensated. Only a handful of people have. That concludes this broadcast. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.